Live from Monster Dome, deep underneath and yet somehow still five stories above Austin, Texas, this is Inside the Locker, the geekiest sportscast you've ever heard.
Like it or else, it's Friday, and that means only one thing. Gotta get down on Friday. No, Rebecca, no, that's not what it means. It means it's time for Inside the Locker here on oneofus.net. This is, of course, your weekly nerdy sportscast. We are the nerds who were stuffed into the lockers in school, but while we were in there, you know what we did? We turned the tables on the jocks. We studied up on sports, and when we came out, we were some sort of mutant hybrid that would really, really make David Cronenberg feel icky. This is Brian Salisbury holding it down with my boy Elliot.
Yeah, the way you describe it, it sounds like we have Stockholm Syndrome.
We something like that. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think that's pretty apt. And then, of course, JC DeLeon over there.
What up, what up?
And Adam is off doing important things for important people, or maybe just trying to find all of the copies of E.T. on Atari. It's hard to say because he's not here.
Hey, don't call it a hypothetical.
Don't call it a hypothetical because he will get very, very upset about that. Just want to let you know that this show, just like all the content on One of Us, is available on iTunes. If you just search One of Us in the podcast section, you can also find us on Stitcher. You can follow the show on Twitter at ITLcast. You can also like the website on Facebook, facebook.com/oneofusnet. And we don't have a lot to talk about in the way of news this week, because everybody seems to understand and is respecting the fact that football is about to start. So just shut up and don't make any waves, because nobody's going to notice you right now, because all we really want is the start of football again. That being said, I think we should go ahead and kick off the show with a little bit of sports news.
Flash, the captain and Mrs. America and all the ships at SeaQuest. These are the scores and stories.
Stop the press.
All right, starting off, we knew it was going to happen. We didn't know the extent of it. Josh Gordon's suspension has been made official. And that suspension is the entire season. So sorry if you picked him up in your fantasy draft thinking, you rolled the dice on him thinking maybe it'd be one or two games. Nope, Josh Gordon out for the whole year. So Johnny Manziel is down one target to work with.
And what did he do?
He smoked weed.
That's it?
That's it, yeah. He repeatedly smoked weed, sure.
Yeah.
But I would like to point out yet again that unless the football is made out of chocolate, it is not a performance-enhancing drug.
If anything, it probably supplements just, you know, relaxation, that they can relax without getting a hangover the next day.
Yeah, if he can catch touchdowns while high as a kite, that guy deserves to be in the Hall of Fame.
Well, there was a pitcher who threw a no-hitter while he was
on LSD.
On LSD.
Yeah, absolutely. And that guy also deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. That is a true feat of athletic brilliance.
Yeah, what's funny about
this... No, we're not condoning drug use, but, you know, it deserves to be said.
What's funny about this story is I'm kind of up and down all over the place on it because, yeah, I don't have a problem with weed, and I don't think he should be suspended for the whole year, but he is a repeat offender. It's not just weed that he's had issues with. It's alcohol, it's codeine, purple drink.
The lean.
All of which are things that are not going to make you a better football player.
Right. But he immediately, his reaction to the NFL upholding the suspension, he released a statement through his lawyer that he is the one disappointed in the NFL's lack of judgment and discretion in this case. And I'm like, bruh, come on.
Well, yeah. It's just like, I don't know how he runs down the field with those big swinging balls just getting in his way the entire time.
It's like the pot calling the cannabis green.
Yeah. I mean, I get, my thing is, if you're going to penalize somebody for only weed, if this was only weed, then how do you justify having a team in Washington and Denver?
Well,
I mean, they're doing a legal substance.
And you know what? When that was made legal, I think that was one of the first things we talked about is how is the NFL going to, with a straight face, maintain the idea that smoking weed is somehow something they need to enforce off the field when two of the states in our nation have said that that's entirely legal? Yeah. So my question is, if this were a Denver Broncos receiver in trouble for weed, would Goodell give him a similar suspension? Let's say he had as many run-ins as Josh Gordon, so we're not talking about apples and oranges. I don't think so. I think they would have to I think it's like states' laws, you know, like small state government. Like, you have to respect each... If you have to respect the tax laws of each state in which you play, I think Roger Goodell would have to respect the pot laws in the states where they play.
I think you're completely right, because one of the reasons, like, I have never done a drug, like... I just missed that.
It's fine. That's on record now. You can say what you actually mean.
No, I mean that. I missed the time in college. I was just a boring college student. And then by the time I got, I was out of school, I was just like, well, I sort of missed my time. And I can't really do it now in case I ever get drug tested.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But if they ever made pot legal in Texas, then I would have an argument with my employer. It's like, look, I did a legal substance.
Yeah.
How are you firing me for a legal substance? Like, so, I mean, it's a bit of a more specious argument if I fly to Denver or if I fly to Seattle and do weed. That's a little different. But if he was in Denver, this receiver was in Denver, his lawyer would have a very legitimate case, even if it was more than weed, saying, hey, this part of it, this was a factor, and maybe it shouldn't be the entire season. He probably could cut a deal for maybe 3 or 4 games.
Right.
Instead of the entire season.
And I think what Elliot is trying to say is, once again, the factor that fucks over the player in this case is the fact that he's in Cleveland.
Yeah. The thing that does kind of make me yeah. The thing Sorry. That does kind of make me lose sympathy for him also is that the NFL gives them, essentially gives players a 10-month window in which they can smoke as much pot as they want and they don't care. The only way they care is if you get caught the first time, then you get put in what the players call the program, in which you get tested randomly every once or twice every
then you
two
get
weeks.
Replaced by a pod person.
So beware like the one, program. Once training camp is over, they don't test you for recreational drugs anymore. The NFL players can do as much coke and weed as they want.
Okay, but at that point he just sounds stupid now. It's
that's
like
what, that's what I'm saying.
Dude, just cycle it out. Just wait.
Yeah. There's a definite sort of Ricky Williams vibe to this whole story. It's like, just stop fucking doing that for 2 minutes and you'll be fine.
Yeah. You brought up an interesting question, though. This is a question I kind of asked myself the other day, and I went online to see if anybody else was asking this question, and nobody has been. But one of the things that NFL players also like about it is the medicinal purposes of it. It's really good for pain and things like that. And I know one of the actual medicinal prescription purposes in the states that allow it is for, like, migraines. And migraines aren't all that dissimilar to concussions.
Ooh.
And Wes Welker is a receiver in Denver who has concussion issues.
Yep, he sure fucking does.
I wonder what's going
to happen. Somebody drafted him.
We'll get to that in a second.
I wonder what's going to happen the day a doctor, like, gets in front of a camera and is like, hey, Roger Goodell, I'm going to write a prescription for this guy because this guy needs weed for his concussions.
Roger
like,
Goodell's going to fuck right off.
Yeah.
That's what's going to happen. It's a legal substance. And he's going to have to make a ruling that is performance enhancing or can help his recovery that's unfair.
Yeah. And I'm envisioning a scenario in which Roger Goodell has the gall to step in front of camera and be like, well, a doctor prescribed it, so he can smoke as much weed as he wants. Plus, he's white.
And then,
as we have been learning a lot lately, it is really good to be white in this country.
And what you're going to see is, like being white in this country, there's going to be a comparative advantage in position. For Denver and Washington, they're going to get some of the best players. It's like, look, you can come here and recover faster and just fucking smoke weed if you feel like it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if it wasn't clear, I'm not endorsing that mentality. I'm actually lamenting it.
Yeah, this
fucking
is all
sucks
lamenting.
Right now. It sucks. But you know what? Here's the thing. I want to talk about something else because the benchmark this year, the exemplar of failure that I've been using for Roger Goodell is the Ray Rice situation and how a 2-game suspension is somehow punishment enough for almost beating your wife to death.
Dragging her out of an elevator.
Yeah, and here's the thing. So now, apparently, because of me, I will take credit for this, because why not? My ego is that huge. They have rolled out a specific domestic abuse policy for the NFL. JC, what are the specifics on this policy that they've rolled out?
It's pretty strict. It's basically first offense is 6 games and second offense is a lifetime banishment.
So, in other words, okay, that's good. So now they're going to go back and add 4 more games to Ray Rice's suspension, right?
Well, no, they can't.
God damn it!
Yeah.
Well, you can't do that.
They're not going to retroactively lengthen Ray Rice's suspension, but to kind of put this in perspective, and I think it is contingent on players getting convicted, which may or may not have really affected Ray Rice anyway, but like...
Well, gave him cover.
Yeah, this would have severely affected somebody like, let's say, Ben Roethlisberger if this rule were in effect a couple years ago.
The fact that he is just still playing...
Yeah.
When... I didn't even say anything because I don't want to get sued.
As a podcast, I like the "we're just not going to say anything."
Sorry!
I think we should start doing that.
Sorry,
just like,
dude, I know.
And here's how we feel about this. And moving on to...
I'm sorry, it's just a lot of those claims against him were never quite substantiated, even though they are extremely convincing.
And that's kind of why I think the NFL... It's kind of a cover. I think people can applaud this move by the NFL, but the NFL can also be like, have the language in the rule because I haven't read the rule and be like,
oh yeah, they
well,
have an out.
Yeah, like if he's not convicted, and we're not going to suspend him.
Well, they probably have other outs. Like if it's a Tuesday and he hopped on 1 foot while he hit her.
Yeah, that's like they're going to be so many weird. Like it's complete bullshit, but they will find loopholes around this.
Well, I mean, and look, it's in every league. I mean, didn't Jason Kidd have that problem?
Yeah,
I mean, and nobody hears about it. Like Sean Penn, nobody hears about it. The only person in this society that I hear about it after it happened, like for a few years now, is Chris Brown, but only because he's such a dick.
Like, well, yeah, and he keeps doing dickish things.
Yeah, it's not like adding to a narrative.
It's not like he's a super nice guy, except for that whole beating Rihanna thing. It's like, no, it turns out he is just an overwhelming douchebag.
Yeah, and I think you should. I think this is. I don't believe in stigma for crime following you in most cases. But this one, I feel like should follow you. It's like, you know what? You're man enough to hit her. You man enough to have that stigma follow you.
Agreed. He did a little. So I guess to be in all fairness, I'm going to be completely fair here. At least something has been done, which has always been my problem with Roger Goodell is I don't think he does enough. I don't think his office does enough. So, yeah, I can criticize this policy that's put in place and I can be cynical about, you know, there will be loopholes, but at least it's there because that's been my issue with Roger Goodell for a long time is he's just not doing enough. So at least this is in place. Hopefully the lifetime ban is enough of a deterrent of a scary piece of language to keep players from doing this. I honestly, here's the other thing though. The NFL just putting a domestic abuse policy in place is kind of like, if Alabama just this year was like, okay, fine, no slavery.
Yeah.
It's like everybody else knows it's wrong. Everybody else has been on board for a long time. But the NFL is just now saying, no, guys, it is not okay to hit women. We are finally on board with that principle. So, well,
I mean, I completely agree with what you said. And what's sort of sad is if you look at the NFL and to a large extent, you know, armed forces, police forces, they're sort of the last bastion of the old view of masculinity.
Mm-hmm.
That's why, you know, Don't Ask, Don't Tell gun repeal was a big deal. That's why there's still a very high incidence of sexual assault in the military when you're overseas. And that's something that's extreme. They're having a hard time dealing with. So, I mean, the fact that the NFL is moving is showing a move in the culture, even though it is really fucking late.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think you definitely have a point, but at least it's something.
It's something. Yeah. It's a step in the right direction, maybe just a few decades too late.
Oh, yeah.
So what else is in the news, JC?
Speaking of suspensions, Brandon Merriweather is kind of at it again. He's caught the ire of the NFL, and, you know, he's kind of one of these repeat offenders. He keeps hitting people illegally, and the NFL's kind of on him now.
I am Iron Man, gonna hit people as hard as I can. Yeah, but see, here's the thing that I can't weigh in on this too much because I didn't see the actual hit.
Mm-hmm.
But from all the pundits I've been listening to, the hit was entirely legal. It was a situation where he tried to hit the guy in the numbers, and the receiver ducked his head down like as they were colliding. And it's like physics tells you that if I'm already in motion and then all of a sudden at the last possible second the receiver ducks his head and hits me with it, there was nothing I could have done to prevent that hit from happening.
Yeah, that's true.
It's another initiative that the NFL said they were going to start. Like last year, they said they were going to start flagging running backs for lowering their head and heading into a pile. Never did that. They've said that because defensive players are complaining, like, how are we supposed to do our job when they lower their head? The NFL's like, we're going to keep an eye on that, and then they haven't. Instead, they suspended Brandon Merriweather again.
This is what Merriweather had to say. He said, you know, they asked him, did you think it was a helmet-to-helmet hit? He said, no, I don't. But at the same time, I'm not the one who wrote the book on penalties. I try to aim at his numbers. I kind of seen the pass go, and I went, and I aimed low, and I hit him with my shoulder. I did everything my coaches taught me to do, and I got the flag. I guess this is the part that bothers me, is it's like, not only did he get flagged for what appears to have been, by all accounts, and again, I haven't seen it myself, a clean hit, but to add on a suspension to that is like, you're not only are you not taking physics into account, but you're punishing this guy for his past. It's like, yes, this is a repeat offender. Yes, he's done sketchy things in the past. I get that. But the real issue here is the rule book and how completely vague it is about these type of hits, and how when they try to nail it down, when they try to make it more clear language, they don't take physics into account. And it's like you can't ignore the science of how these things work. And it's like if you want to throw a penalty flag because you're not taking that into account and because in the moment it's hard to do all the calculations for
suspension.
Yeah, don't suspend the guy. I feel like this is a punishment for the things he's done in his past. Yeah,
you're taking a mistake and then you're making it even – you're doubling down the mistake because you're like, no, we had time to look at our wrong call and fuck you. That's why.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I absolutely agree with that. So I – again, this is a little bit of conjecture on my part because I haven't seen – I've looked everywhere for a video or something where it would actually show the hit, but it hasn't surfaced yet. Man, so
preseason video is hard to find, but it's really easy to find every snap that Johnny Manziel has played.
Yeah, crazy how that works, right? I found like 38 GIFs of him flipping off the Redskins bench, but can't find this controversial hit that, you know, if there was more film of, maybe he could make an appeal. It's weird how that works.
I don't know. I can't blame the cameraman. I don't watch preseason football either. I feel like they're just like, oh, my God, it's like some guy from Canada, and he just won't – he's never going to make the team.
I feel like I'm standing on the – I'd be standing on the sideline of that, like, camera that flies over the field and just pushing the button to make it go zzz, zzz, just like, hey, look, I can make it fly. Put a little Batman action figure underneath it. Batman doesn't even fly. That's weird.
Then they would say, Josh Gordon, put the remote down.
Well, I tell you, it's actually funny. As of right now, it is right now as we're recording this, the start of the football season.
Oh, my gosh.
Not preseason. A&M and
South Carolina
are playing right now, and Boise and Ole Miss are playing right now. And oh, my God. Oh, my God.
South Carolina is getting cock-knocked by Texas A&M. Oh, my goodness. Without Johnny Football, no less.
And this is the matchup we wanted to see last year, Clowney versus Manziel, and we got it 1 year too late.
Yeah, I think everyone who was already writing checks that they were going to make off Johnny Manziel was doing everything in their power to keep that matchup from happening. Because Clowney would have torn Manziel in two.
Yeah, he would have showed up for that game.
You remember that scene in...
Friday Night... Oh, no. Not Another Teen Movie.
No. Oh, well, that. I was thinking of the scene in The Mummy Returns where the Scorpion King takes that guy up and then just pulls him in half.
Yeah.
Or when Megatron splits the most racist robot, well, the second most racist robot in the Transformers franchise.
I like that we have to be like, Jazz was, but then Ratchet and something. It wasn't Ratchet.
Do you remember when the Transformers franchise was only as racist as the robot named Jazz says things like, this looks like a cool spot to kick it?
Yeah, it's like, it's sort of like, you know what? It's fine.
It's like all of a sudden that becomes far more acceptable racism when in the next movie it's like, Mom, we can't read. It's like, oh, for God's sake, dude.
Like, literally they go, we don't read much. Just like, I can't ignore this anymore.
Gold teeth, speaking Ebonics, they can't read. Like, again, what centuries racism are you cribbing from? You colossal asshole.
Well, and then in 4, we have Tokyo Bot.
Oh. I am a Seminabutu. It's like, first of all, I don't know how Ken Watanabe, who's actually Japanese, manages to do the like stereotypical Japanese voice.
He should have just said, let him fight the entire time.
He's like adding extra syllables to all of his words just so he conforms to Michael Bay's weird stereotype of a Japanese person.
What's even worse is like, here's a
transformer.
Here's a transformer that spoke Japanese and then went through the trouble of learning English the hard way and wrongly so that he gets that accent. Not that we could probably just scan it in and just know it automatically like they fucking know English.
Right.
Yeah. It just, I don't even. Mm. I'm going to do it again. I don't even. I have no words.
We're going to start a segment with Elliot that's just called I Don't Even. And it's just going to be like half rants about things that we just get tired of partway through and just like, I don't even.
Well, that's, I tell you, that I don't know where I reminded
that
me.
That reminds me of every other show we've done.
Well, it just reminds me of another segment. I was reading some stuff on Facebook and Twitter, and the Legion is starting to grow. I'm starting to see some people who are like giving that ITL love. They're like, yeah, like I like ITL. It's a good podcast. I'm like, we love you back. That's all I got
to
say.
Well, I think that's because all of our mothers are on Facebook. I think that's why you're starting to see more compliments. Well,
also,
for the show.
Like, I hadn't listened to an ITL in a few weeks, and I forgot just, you do a great job of editing these together.
Ah, come on.
Like, you really tightened up last week's one, because I remember that one, and we were sort of all over the board, and like, your editing was like, things were snappy. I was like, shit.
That's the secret nobody knows, is that We actually record for 7 hours. Yeah. We talk about nonsense in sports for 7 hours, and then I go
and do all those lines of blow.
Yeah, that's true. Well, we don't actually do cocaine. We just roll up the dollar bills.
Yeah.
You know, then we take pictures of ourselves.
We call Johnny Manziel to do it for us.
Yeah, there you go. What else is in the news, JC?
So USC is having a rough week.
Oh my God, is USC having a rough week?
It was having a rough week in general with one story, and just in the last couple of hours, another story is broken. But first.
Fake superheroes and everything.
Yeah, first senior cornerback Josh Shaw.
Oh, Josh.
It was reported he showed up on Monday, and he had showed up to camp with two high ankle sprains. Obviously, USC was like, hey, how'd you get those two ankle sprains?
And he proceeds to concoct a story.
Yep. He very bravely tells the story about how he saved his nephew from drowning at a family barbecue, and everybody was like, oh, you were amazing, you're a hero, you saved your nephew. USC ran with it, posted the story on their website.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
People called USC and being like, that's not what happened.
Yeah, that's not at all what happened. In fact, this reminds me of, do you guys remember John Lovitz on SNL? He had like that pathological liar character. It would just end every sentence with, yeah, that's the ticket. I feel like that's what happened. And Shaw just walked into the USC office like, yeah, I jumped off a balcony to save my nephew who was drowning. That's the ticket.
Yeah, he got his sister to corroborate the story, but then we don't know all the details, and this is the sort of thing where I think it's more and more is only going to be revealed because that's how things tend to be. Because the same thing that happened in this building, him jumping out of the balcony, is what he admitted to USC. There also was a break-in that police were called to, and police did mention that they saw someone running away from the scene. They don't know who, but the dude jumped out of a balcony.
So you're telling me that 2 + 2 might equal 4?
I think, you know what, with a mystery of this many layers, it's impossible to solve case. We may need to call in Cumberbatch. I'm not sure that a mere mortal would be able to put those pieces together.
We're going to need the Avengers of TV detectives. So I'm going to need Matlock.
Kojak.
I'm going to need Kojak. I'm going to need Columbo.
Columbo, for sure.
I'm going to need some Jake and the Fat Man.
At least Jake.
For the Hawkeye and Black Widow part of the team.
Stabler and what's the Law and Order SVU? Stabler and what's the girl's name?
I forgot. I can't watch Law and Order.
Oh, we obviously need
Christopher Maloney.
Wait. I'm sorry. If we're doing Law and Order, we of course need to get Ice-T. Show up and be like, so let me get this straight. You're saying a guy lied about where he was on the night in question? Yeah, Ice, that's a basic part of your job. Like,
that's exactly what brought you here.
Have you ever heard John Mulaney's whole spiel about Ice-T? He's like, so you're saying this guy gets off on little girls with pigtails? It's like, yeah, Ice, you work in the sex crimes division.
Yeah.
You may need to get used to this. You've been here for several seasons, and yet every case baffles you.
Well, that is the thing about watching SVU. Like, all these, they always get so into the cases.
Mm-hmm.
But whenever you work in the department like that, it's horrible, but those facts become mundane.
You mean this guy made up a story about how he got injured so he wouldn't get in trouble with his football coach? Yeah, Ice, that's exactly what I'm saying.
Or he might have been trying to rob somebody. if this story teaches our listeners one thing.
Don't lie about being a superhero. We don't need another
hero. Not for a moral reason, just for practicality. Don't lie, because lies will eventually come out if you're not good at it.
Lies.
And not just that, but don't come up with the type of lie that's going to spread virally. And like people on Good Morning America were talking about this heroic kid who saved his nephew, and he's like, oh shit.
Dun, 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 dun. It's all bullshit.
Yeah, if you're going to lie, mix it with a half truth so you have some kind of cover, and then keep it vague.
You don't give details. You just got caught being a douche.
He's the same as that guy that was doing weed. You're just not good at this. Jesus Christ, man.
I just feel like he'd have been better off being like, what? I slept wrong. I woke up with two
hearts. Say anything. I fell in the shower. There we go.
You keep it small. I stole a Kit Kat last week. No one knows. Keep it small.
I just want to make this guy watch 8 seasons of Always Sunny in Philadelphia and be like, this is how you do it. We do it this way.
We basically, our biggest problem with this guy is he's not as good at being a lying sack of shit as he should be.
Yeah.
Okay.
You play for USC, you should be pretty good at it.
we should probably before we segue into the story that segues nicely into, what was the other reason for the headaches at USC this week?
The other story that just kind of broke a little while ago, Anthony Brown, who's a fourth string running back, he just abruptly quit the team because he accused Steve Sarkisian, the new USC coach, of being a racist. He went on Twitter and he said, "Sark treated me like a slave in his office. Can't play for a racist man. Hashtag fight on." Which I don't know why he's saying hashtag fight on. He quit the team. So.
It's not exactly fighting the good fight.
It'd be like if he played for Auburn and he quit the team and said hashtag War Eagle and be like, no, you don't. You quit the team. You can't say that anymore.
Yeah. I mean, this is a pretty serious accusation, first of all. I can't obviously say one way or the other, whether that's true, because I'm not a part of the team. I wasn't privy to these meetings. I don't know. Like, I don't know anything about Sarkisian.
I don't know much, but it's the sort of thing. 19-year-old kid, fourth string running back. This is the sort of thing it just broke a little while ago, so by tomorrow there'll probably be a lot more details because the Josh Shaw thing kind of slowly is like, well, maybe he didn't save his nephew, and it just kind of took a couple of days for it to fully break. But, in this case, I'm willing to side with the adult.
Yeah, I've had stuff happen to me, and I wouldn't have to say, this person's racist. I have, this happened, and this happened, and this happened, and this happened.
Right. It wouldn't be a surprise. And that's the other thing, too, is it's like, he must be the most intensely specific type of racist that he can work with all of the other black players on the team except for you.
And it's not like he's a coach that came, from the South and came up to, he's from Washington. I don't know. I'm on the side on Steve Sarkisian. I don't see any reason.
Yeah, we can only really speculate.
I just wish he, if you're going to come out with this, where, if, as a black guy, he should know that you're behind the eight ball when you say that.
Yeah.
And even if you come with, here, the police stuff, if you come with, they did this and this and this, people will still go, well, it probably wasn't that bad. So he should know to come with, don't just say this guy is.
Yeah.
I want to know. Tell me what he did.
He's a racist. How is he a racist? Because he doesn't like black people. Okay, but what did he do?
Yeah.
He was racist.
It's like, you got to come with more proof than that. Otherwise, you're not going to get anywhere.
Going to need a little more than that. Just a few more details. And again, maybe that is something that will come out. This is, that just happened. But all this just to say that the problems at USC continue. And apparently, trouble follows their former coaches as well, because, Jay-Z,
Pete Carroll was fined by the NFL for holding illegal practices with illegal contact in the offseason.
Hold on. It wasn't that the practices themselves were illegal? Like, they weren't supposed to be practicing? It was that there was contact?
I think it was a combination of both.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, I think, because it's kind of like in the offseason, you're not supposed, there's a certain window in which you can mandate players to come, but for the most part, you can't mandate it at all. It's just kind of an unwritten rule that you have to show up. But yeah, you also you definitely cannot have any kind of contact.
And then there's the very clearly written rule that says you can't hold the practice or have contact at the practice.
Yeah.
And yet Pete Carroll, who, by the way, this isn't the first time he's cheated, guys. It kills me because it's like the Seahawks knew what they were getting with this guy who fled USC just before the NCAA was about to drop the hammer on him for recruiting violations. He's like violations. The
Joker getting away from a crime scene.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's driving off in that bus.
It's like the Roadrunner stepping to the side and letting the anvil fall on the coyote. But it's like, they should have known what was going to happen. But I want to ask you a question, Pete Carroll. Do you think you're running a football team or the Order of the Phoenix? Because what kind of moron thinks he can have a secret practice, like this secret meeting that no one will know about except the 100 guys who are part of your team that all have been required to show up for something? They all know that legally you're not supposed to, by the letter of the law of the NFL, that you're not supposed to be holding. Somebody's going to fucking talk. It's like Bruce Wayne thinking he can hire all those contractors to build a bat cave and no one's going to mention the fact that, hey, there is a there's a whole crime lab and a Batmobile under Bruce Wayne's house. If I were trying to figure out who Batman was, I'd go there first.
Well, you know, this is how big of a nerd I am. I actually know how he got that done, theoretically. But
I'm amnesia bullets.
I actually was liking X-Men Wolverine Origins until the amnesia bullets.
Oh yeah,
like it was okay. And they put the tape over Deadpool's mouth. Because like there's like a third of that movie that's salvageable.
That is officially the nicest thing anyone's ever said about the film is that there's a third of it that's salvageable.
There really is. Like the part where he's in Canada, he's just trying to deal with, you know, what he is and all. That's cool. But to go back to this, this is just what he does. And he does this shit because he doesn't get consequences.
Wait, like, are we still talking about Batman?
Well, both. Pete Carroll.
Oh, Pete Carroll. Okay.
Yeah. I didn't want to take it into like, well, he hired different contractors, had it constructed offsite in modular construction. He put it together himself through shell companies that nobody knew what they were building it for. But lawyered. I digress.
Lawyered, ladies and gentlemen.
No, nerded, because I
actually, nerded.
I was the guy in middle school that would sit down and read the Star Trek technical manuals and the Batman technical manuals. So like I literally spent 4 hours one Saturday when I was in middle school just reading about how the Batcave was constructed. Pretty much. This guy's never had a consequence, and even this, he's gonna get caught. He's probably gonna get like maybe $100,000 fine, which is nothing to him. So he's like, well, fuck you, here's a check. I don't care.
Yeah, I wonder how stuff like that works out, because he was fined $100,000 and the team was fined $200,000, which if I'm the team owner, I'm being like, no, you give me $200,000 more.
Well, I mean, but the team owner is directly benefiting.
That's true.
It's like the team owner is like, I mean, neither of them care. They're just like, oh, it's $100,000.
Maybe he thought because their defense is called the Legion of Boom that he needs to act like Lex Luthor and like try to get away with some shady shit. Well,
I tell you, I hope the owners don't think that Pete Carroll is just this amazing coach. Pete Carroll's competent, but the problem they're going to be facing in about, I think, a year or two, when Russell Wilson wants to get paid like he should, they can't keep those defensive players in the backfield like they can right now, because they can give them great contracts.
Mm-hmm.
The minute that happens, that defense is going to be average again. They're not going to be bad. They're just not going to be Superman running around the goddamn field. It's like an all-star team back there right now. So, I mean, just give it a few more years. Seattle will be regular, and you'll have all these bandwagon fans who are worse bandwagon fans than the fucking Cavs. Now we got LeBron. All these people who've never been into football is like, I love Seattle. Seattle's my team. And I'm like,
12 man.
Like, did you ever watch football before?
That is the question.
Yeah, and I usually never hold it against people who are bandwagon fans, because people like winners. But it's just been brazen. I've been seeing it on Facebook everywhere. Oh, Seattle. I'm like, I'm not, nothing against hipsters, but you were the biggest fucking hipster I know.
Wait, in Seattle, you say?
No, in Austin. Austin, you say.
Oh, in Austin, you say.
It's like, you were the biggest fucking hipster I know. Like, you work, like, to take one off of the Theog, you work in a fucking welding factory. Like, and you produce sparks is how you describe your job title to me, which this is a joke off of them. You never watched any sports before, but now you're a fan of Seattle. Do you like their logo? I don't know what's going on.
I feel like welding's kind of a blue collar job. I feel like that's the kind of thing that
In Austin.
It's not, okay.
Not in Austin.
I wouldn't know a blue collar job if I were forced to work one. So maybe I should just leave that as it stands. Do we have anything on?
We got Michael.
We can talk about ESPN reporting on Michael Sam's showering habits.
Brian's going to have an aneurysm now, dear listeners.
Yeah.
All right, ESPN. I've got two bones to pick with you this week.
You can use this to segue into your
I will. First of all, I don't care one fucking bit when Michael Sam takes his showers and when he doesn't. JC, you just fill them in on the particulars so I can start ranting, please.
So basically, one of the ESPN First Take reporters, not Skip Bayless or Stephen A. Smith, but the other douchebag.
Well, Stephen A. Smith is still suspended, right?
No, it was just for like 1 week.
Oh.
It was like a 2 day. It was an NFL suspension. It was like 2 days.
Wait, I thought it was Levitard that was suspended.
They were both suspended for different things. Levitard is being mean to LeBron.
That's right. Can't do that. ESPN's watch.
He asked an ESPN field reporter whether, because the NFL cuts are coming up, teams have to go from 93 to 75, and was asking this reporter, how is Michael Sam doing? How is he getting along with the team? And she led that to report information that she was told, and that the player told her, Sam is respecting our space. He doesn't seem to shower with us. He seems to respect our privacy. Or maybe he's just staying out on the field and working extra. I don't know. She ran with that and was like, Michael Sam doesn't shower with his teammates. He doesn't hang out with them.
But the guy said he's respecting our space and respecting our privacy.
This is the problem that I have with this story. One, once more, for the bleachers, I don't give a shit when a guy on a football team takes a shower, and neither would ESPN if it weren't for the fact that he's gay. So immediately I'm like, why are you reporting on this? Except the fact that this is, again, I've said this about ESPN before. They create controversy, and then they spend weeks reporting on where did this controversy come from. You fucking started it.
So it's the Fox News technique.
Yeah, absolutely. They start shit, and then not only do they talk about that shit, then they start talking about, well, the media has really reacted. And like, yeah, the media. You are the media. They do this all the time, and it drives me bonkers.
And this was like within hours of an uproar being held about this because people saying it's inappropriate. And Chris Long, his teammate, even leapt to his defense saying on Twitter, "Dear ESPN, ESPN, everyone but you is over it." Within hours, ESPN is like, well, we were just reporting information that we were told.
But no one is forcing ESPN to report things. That's what I love about it. Like, right. Oh, well, we had a responsibility as journalists. No, you didn't.
Because it was only for the next day for ESPN president John Skipper to be like, hey, we're sorry. Maybe we shouldn't have done that.
Well, and the thing is, it's like, if they have a few problems here. One, this is a story that I feel like eventually may have been more of a robust story you could actually have reported on. But wait for a better story to come along. Don't fabricate something. And two, if you do fabricate something, at the very least, do like Fox News and stand behind your bullshit. So at least we think you believe your bullshit.
Yeah.
I mean, I can not like your action, but think that you're not disingenuous. But the minute you just back off, well, I just know you even know you're full of shit.
I would love to see them throw up a Fox News-type Hail Mary where all of a sudden this is somehow LeBron James's fault. Like, it had nothing to do with anything. It's just like LeBron James is sort of like their Obama. It's just like whenever we're in trouble, go to that card. Just play the LeBron card. But here's the other thing. What the guy said, there's so little controversy. There's so little intrigue in the thing the guy said. I don't even understand why they thought it would be worth talking about. Like, oh, yeah, he doesn't shower at the exact same time as us, but then maybe because he's working, it doesn't really matter. It's almost like the guy, as soon as he said it, was like, oh, you know what? This is bullshit. This is not even worth talking about.
Well, it sounds like...
And ESPN was like, oh, no, not so.
Well, I mean, hearing that statement, though, it sounds like he was trying to walk it back. Because he said he respects our privacy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's separate from them. Which I'm not trying to make a big deal of, but I think he was probably in his mind, I didn't mean to say it that way. Let me walk it back before this becomes a big thing. But it was already too late.
Well, and it should be mentioned that we're speculating now on what's actually going on. But I want to point out that it's speculation so that we're not ESPN and just it's fact.
And we're actually giving this we're giving this guy the benefit of the doubt, too.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Like, it's so easy. As people on podcasts, we for damn sure know this. It's so easy to say something that you just don't mean. Like, your brain gets ahead of your mouth. Yeah. Your mouth gets ahead of your brain, just like what happened now.
Yeah.
And it's out there, and you're like, shit. Like, I had one of my best friends, he's still one of my best friends today, he said something like, God, 8 years ago now, that it was racist, but I could tell that he didn't even mean it. It just, he had like a brain-mouth thing that happened. And I give him shit about it. Like, I just give him a hard time about it. But it's just, people make mistakes and people just misspeak sometimes. But he didn't have ESPN around him. Like, what? What did you say?
Yeah.
We're going to just throw it up on national media.
I just want to point out yet again that this is the slowest news week I think we've experienced since the show started. So that may
slow ones while you were at Comic-Con.
Oh, that's true. God, but yes. that may also be the reason why ESPN's like a somewhat half-assed fact or fiction. Who cares? Run with it.
Well, I mean, they're also...
We gotta fill time. So my other bone to pick with ESPN involves a little guy named Colin Coward. It's Coward, right? Like, complete and utter ineffectual coward.
But he's like 6'2". He's not that little.
I'm sorry. I'm still calling this douchebag out. So I have been linked... he said some very incendiary things that specifically relate to us and what we do here. Basically, he was going on his show, and because the Emmys were about to happen, was not only... He was basically deriding people that watch TV at all, but specifically Game of Thrones. And he was putting on his trademark fake nerd voice. which is
nerd alert,
very insulting. Where he's like, oh, g-g-g. And he was saying things like, oh, goblins and armor and swords and blah, blah, like just classic high school jock douchebaggery. And he actually said, if you watch Game of Thrones, maybe you should try having sex with a woman. The implication being that somehow the fans of Game of Thrones are not romantically inclined. Colin, I got news for you, jackass. Game of Thrones is actually a pop culture phenomenon watched by millions upon millions upon millions of people. And not only that, but to completely, like, to cast aspersions on the sexual abilities of a group of people just because they like something that you don't is the most hackneyed, boring form of jock bullying. I'm sorry, you're a giant cliche, and nothing you say has had any merit for the last several years. In fact, I read a transcription of a previous show where he actually said that people who base their estimations of players on research and numbers and facts are nerds. And if you're actually going to deride people who use facts instead of just knee-jerk reactions and instead of just incendiary things that you can mouth fart out on the air to get you a few more listeners, you shouldn't be on the air. You are the Fox News of sportscasters. If you're like, facts are for nerds and you're not a nerd, right? It's basically like saying, if you go against anything Fox News says, you're a communist. Colin Cowherd protested way too much and said things like, on Sunday nights, I'm making love to my beautiful wife, and that's why I don't watch Game of Thrones. I'm not understanding why the two things are mutually exclusive, and if you've seen Game of Thrones and how much sex there is on that show, talk about an aphrodisiac. Your argument not only is completely insulting to people who do like both sports and fantasy and all the geeky stuff as well, but it just kind of makes you look like a total tool who shouldn't be on the air. Here's the other thing, Colin Cowherd. You do realize how you make your living, right? You make your living by proxy of a bunch of grown men who play games as a profession. You actually don't contribute anything. You just talk about grown men who play games for a living, which I am all for, but do not act like you are somehow, you know, righteously above this other group of people, like you've created some sort of hierarchy of cool when you yourself are basically just an observer, just like the rest of us watching fantasy, just like us watching movies, just like us watching sports. So I would love to know how what you do is less nerdy than someone who watches one of the most popular TV shows on the air. I would really love to know where the line of demarcation is. That's all I have to say about that.
When you play the Game of Thrones, you win or you die. There is no middle ground.
There also was, you know, talking about Slow News Week, I read something, I think it was Tuesday, where the Minnesota Timberwolves owner just threw a little bit of shade at Kevin Love.
Oh, yeah.
Where he was talking about, well, you know, they're going to make him play defense. And, you know, is he going to be able to adjust to that? And it's like, man, go fuck yourself. He's really not even relevant.
What does that taste? Oh, sour grapes. That's what I'm tasting.
Dan Gilbert vintage.
By the way, we haven't even mentioned that. I guess that's probably a new story we should mention, is that Kevin Love's trade to the Cleveland Cavaliers officially went through. So,
the 30-day moratorium ended, and so now it's all official, just as LeBron predicted. Kevin Love is his teammate.
Yeah. You make him sound like the amazing Kreskin.
Yeah, seriously. Nostradamus, LeBron James, who gets his information, by the way, from ESPN.
Yeah.
He's with the Cavaliers, so obviously that's another feather in their cap and another kind of push in the direction of legitimate contender as opposed to just one of the most fun teams to watch.
Just waiting for Ray Allen.
Ray Allen's
going to come back from his vacation in China.
And they got Sean Marion for a song just to be a veteran off the bench. I mean, they're going to have a pretty goddamn tough team.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not as excited about Sean Marion, but I think it's gonna help. He was one of my favorites at one point.
I mean, he was always great on Dallas.
So all of this to say Pete Carroll's a douchebag? Like, I've completely lost the thread of what we were talking about.
Well, we can also talk about, if we're talking about Pete Carroll's a douchebag, we've lost the thread. Fuck it. Lane Kiffin's also a douchebag. I just want to say that. And I wish him no success at Alabama.
Since we were talking about the NBA did establish a rule that the players have been asking for years, in which David Stern was always like, go fuck yourselves. The players have always been asking for more space at the baseline for them to land when they jump, so as they don't break their legs like Paul George just did.
Yeah.
And so Adam Silver, in all of his wisdom, said, you know what, that is a good idea. You guys have been asking for that for years? That's crazy. Let's make it happen.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, there's not going to be as many photographers on the floor. There's going to be a lot more space for them to land on.
I just, you know what, that I actually don't agree with the photographer thing, because I feel like that makes great padding for these guys to land on if they land on one of these chubby photographer dudes, as true. Opposed to landing on the hardwood floor. And yes, I'm basically saying that they're just fodder for a landing pad for the athletes, but so
my,
be it.
My favorite thing whenever that happens, and like you can see a player like land and like he accidentally, not of his own volition, he was falling, but he like broke the photographer's camera. You can see the camera guy get so pissed at the player. He's like,
it's like, do you know where you were sitting?
What are you doing, buddy?
Do you know where you are? You're in the jungle, baby! Well, it's your like, camera's gonna get broke!
It's like the old Chris Rock bit where he's like, you know, you can't really get mad at you can't really get mad at a shark if it bites you in the ocean. It's like, you going into the shark's home! It's like the shark came in your house and said, ow, I'm gonna bite you.
That was a good Chris Rock.
That was a horrible Chris Rock impression. I can do this. Mr. Sandler, would you give me some money, please?
Wow.
I'll be in any movie you want.
Wow, it's funny because that Chris Rock sounds a lot like Kevin James, too. so, yeah, a lot of things going on, and by that I mean not a lot of things going on. But
I tell you, I feel like Adam Silver may be getting a bit too much credit because he's not really hitting tough. They probably are hard. But it's like, he's hitting these slow pitches over the middle. It's like,
yeah, he's basically like all of the things that make complete sense and are logically sound that David Stern was just an asshole for not doing. It's like, oh, yeah, we should totally do that. Oh.
Greatest hero of all time.
It's like, no, I just thought anyone would do that. Nope, sorry, just you.
I just feel like I'm watching Monty Python reading some of these stories. It's like, and that was much rejoicing. Okay,
move on. News segment over. And now we're going to move into something we haven't done in a while, but I'm really excited to do again. And that is Cheers from the Cheap Seats, where we actually read your tweeted questions. And I really like this segment because it reminds me that 4 people at least listen to this show. And I thank you for that. So the first question is from at the Whiskey Wolf, who asks, who will win the AFC North this year? Now, listeners, if you're not familiar with the AFC North, that is the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Cleveland Browns, the Baltimore Ravens, and the Cincinnati Bengals. JC, what do you think on this?
Man.
The viewers are going to lose.
That's like 4 of the worst offenses. Well, maybe Cincinnati. Cincinnati's probably got the best offense out of
that. That's a sad fact. That's a sad fact. Cincinnati was going to be my pick as well because, you know, much as I think that Dalton's contract was a bit overinflated, and we've certainly seen this particular division do things where they give their quarterbacks way too much money, Joe Flacco, yeah. And then those quarterbacks, you know, completely bust out the year after they have their big payday. That being said, I think with A.J. Green and Giovanni Bernard, I think they've got the best offense of those 4 teams.
Yeah, Dalton's going to throw for 4,000 yards again.
Yeah,
and they have a tough defense.
And then Gio Bernard's a year older. The defense isn't terrible. Yeah, I mean, Cincinnati might have this wrapped up because Cleveland's going to give them nothing. Pittsburgh has an awful offense, and the Ravens' defense, strangely enough, is going to be really bad this year.
Yeah,
and I know this is going to be hard for you guys to believe, but I'm not convinced Johnny Manziel is going to be very good. So I think maybe, yeah, don't put a lot of stock in the actual Cleveland Browns. I think it's going to be Cincinnati by a long shot. All right, Scott Smidlin asks us, what is a favorite sports pump-up song / CFB prediction, college football predictions? Wait, so...
Those are 2 different questions.
Yeah, those are 2 completely different questions that he's put together with a slash.
The champion deserves 2 different questions.
Or what song do we like that gets us pumped up for making college football predictions?
I'm thinking it's probably just 2 different questions.
I thought wasn't David Harkins our overall champion last year?
I thought Smilin was the...
He was. I think he was one of the finalists, David Harkins was the overall winner.
Smilin's my champion. Fuck Harkins.
I didn't vote for Harkins. That's not how fantasy football works, Elliot. I keep trying to tell you.
Fantasy football means I get to choose who I think is the captain. Like, Obama, no, Robin Williams, Captain My Captain, is the winner.
That's what I say.
Well, that is weird. Favorite sports pump-up song?
I didn't mean that, David Harkin. You're a good guy.
He doesn't listen anymore. He got his trophy. He's done with us. Favorite sports pump-up song? I guess I'm going to have to run through the litany.
I got one.
I was going
to
say
I'm going to have to run through the litany of jock jams on this, so I'll let you guys go first.
Well, back when I was in college, I used to have all my exams on the same day every 3 weeks. So I had like a game day playlist because I am that big of a nerd. Mm. And the one that always stood out to me was We Ready by Archie Ebersole.
Mm-hmm. We ready. We ready for y'all.
Yeah. And it just goes into it. Love. That's my song. If I need to get pumped up, that's what I listen to.
Nice. JC?
I've been trying to work out a lot recently. I'm hoping to go like 5 days a week, but I end up going like three, sometimes 4 days
a week. You lazy person. Slacking off.
But usually on a Monday or Tuesday when I get there and I'm just like, I don't feel like being here, and I start playing music on my iPod, I'll start playing the soundtrack to the movie Warrior. And the first song is called Listen to the Beethoven. And it's a song that plays during the training montage sequence in the movie. And it's kind of like it's a movie score kind of mixed in with the Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. It's really cool. It pumps me up. I don't know.
Actually, I got a second one. It's a 40-minute long mix.
And it's Blood Brothers.
By the Blood Brothers. Yeah. That I'm a Patreon subscriber on Rage Select, and they cut together the Broforce video game with the Blood Brothers. And I actually will watch that while I work out because it's just explosions in America. Like, I'm sweating American flags by the end of that workout. It's awesome.
Yeah, there's not a ton of music that I listen to when I work out because I've gotten really into listening to podcasts. And
I can never do that. Like, I don't work out hard enough when I listen to podcasts for me.
It's weird, yeah. Music doesn't seem to work for me.
Next time I'm doing digital noise, I'm just in the middle of it for no reason going to be like, yeah, and I think what's wrong with this Blu-ray is, Elliot, run faster, goddammit! And just be like, oh shit, what's going on? I didn't even know I was here. Okay. I think for me, it will always be Eye of the Tiger. Always, yep. Always, always, always. But I also like Trick Daddy's, I think it's Trick Daddy and Little John, maybe? It's called Let's Go.
Yes, I know what you're talking about.
Where they sample Ozzy Osbourne.
Let's go. If you want it, then you get it, and we know.
I'm about to mess a ninja up. Let's go. Yeah. So either Tiger or Trick Daddy, I guess.
Or there's another one that is a little. I'm looking through my playlist right now. This one sounds weird.
I have no doubt.
The opening Jay-Z part of Umbrella is really, really good to just as a start to your workout. It's like no clouds in my zone. It's really just sort of a pump up part of that song, and then you just change it after that.
Also, the Ennio Morricone theme from The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly is kind of a good thing to work out to. What are we talking about? Questions. Cheers from the cheap seats.
We had college football predictions.
Oh, college! They will play. They will play football at the college level, and
Let's say. Playoffs.
Okay. I guess, yeah. So the thing about the playoffs, guys, correct me if I'm wrong, is it doesn't have to be one team from each powerhouse conference. There's only four.
No.
Right.
But is it set up in such a way that there could be multiple teams from a single conference?
It's going to be the committee of, I think, like 13 people.
Condoleezza Rice.
And, it's basically going to be the 13 people that decide who the four are going to be. It's not going to be based on computers or rankings.
I'm going to call that group the Star Chamber.
Yeah. So people have been kind of speculating that it has to be one team from every conference. It doesn't necessarily have to be. It's going to be whatever those 13 people decide. It's more than likely going to be one team from every conference. Out of the Big 12, probably going to be Oklahoma this year. Pac-12, Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
No,
you know, UCLA.
Really?
I've actually heard a lot of people, and that's kind of the thing. I was like, any prediction I could make now, it's not going to matter because Florida State is ranked number one to defend their title. The team that's ranked number one at the beginning of the season almost never goes on to win the whole thing. So
I think Florida's going to upset them this year.
Hmm.
The SEC, I think, is also up for grabs completely. Like, I don't think it's just Alabama.
I don't think it's just Alabama either. I think I think Auburn's got a good shot at repeating their success in the SEC. But I mean, if we're going to, if I have to, like, gun to my head, had to predict the four teams I thought were going to be in the playoffs, it would be Oregon, Florida State, Oklahoma. It's not going to be Michigan State. Not going to be South Carolina, I can guarantee you that. I guess. Shit, I don't know. I've completely lost this. I don't even know. I think if they allow, if multiple teams from a single division get in, I think it might be Florida State, Alabama. Might be Florida State, Alabama, Oklahoma, and Oregon, which is just, it's boring. Those are boring picks at the top four. But it's oh my God, college football is such a volatile playground when it comes to predicting things at the beginning of the year for the end of the year, because one loss and you're pretty much done.
Yeah.
So we only have
guesses more than predictions.
Yeah, these are just blind. You know what? If we're just going by blind guesses, I'm going to say Oregon, Oklahoma, Baylor, and Ohio State.
Okay.
Just throwing darts, guys. Just throwing darts at the wall.
You're just like, screw the SEC.
I'm gonna say these are like the really big out there predictions. I'm going to say UCLA, Michigan State, Alabama, and Florida State.
All right.
That's what I would say. Because Michigan State and UCLA are on the up, and they're still really hungry, and I think they finally get over that hump, and they get to the playoffs.
Yeah, to go one from every conference, yeah, I'd say Oregon, Oklahoma, I'm going to say Auburn, and Florida State.
Well, I got a question. I've been listening to a lot of Austin, Texas radio, sports radio. A lot of talk about Charlie Strong in Texas. I think they're going to be decent this year. I think it's probably a 7 or 8 win season.
Oh, yeah. They're not going to do anything this year, but yeah.
I mean, I think he's going to have him out there actually fucking tackling instead of, I got you. I touched you. You're supposed to go down.
This is not two-hand touch, boys. Yeah. Let's get it in gear. Our next question, by the way, that question I don't think I actually said was, oh, no, that was the second part of Smilin's question. Damn it, Smilin. At Deadbeat at Dawn asks, who would win in a fight between Charlie Ward and Kenny Anderson?
Do you guys know who those people are?
No.
Okay, I'll throw this one.
I was like, should I know who they are?
Charlie Ward was a Heisman Trophy winner for Florida State in, I believe, 1991. Went on to play point guard for the New York Knicks.
And Kenny Anderson.
And Kenny Anderson was a point guard for the New Jersey Nets. Because Charlie Ward played football and won a Heisman Trophy, I would give the edge to Charlie Ward because there's also... And I would also do that because there's a really funny highlight of Kenny Anderson. I don't know if you YouTube Kenny Anderson, you can see this highlight, but there's a moment in the game where he gets really frustrated and he punches the ball to the ground and the ball comes back and hits him in the face.
Wah, wah.
So Kenny Anderson, probably not very good with the ball punching. So I would give the edge to Charlie Ward because of that.
Man, that's some really underhanded fighting if you think ball punching is really going to be that much of a factor. That's all I have to say.
I have a question for the listener. And I'm not trying to insult you, but how did this question come to your head? Like, did something happen?
Between those two? I don't know. I know this guy personally. He probably was just kind of...
He's fucking with us.
Is this some kind of story that I'm not aware of that, like, they're in the news?
No, absolutely not.
I bet he was trying to get us and be like, these guys won't know who the hell these two are.
Boom. Succeeded, you got
JC'd. Basketball nerd.
You got DeLioned. A. LeHue381 asks, who do we think are going to take the wild card spots in baseball?
Oh, man, I was hoping you were going to ask us that.
Well, right now, the division leaders in the American League, Baltimore, Kansas City, and the LA Angels, although it goes back and forth daily, it seems like, between the Angels and the Oakland A's as to who's got the American League West. And then you have Detroit, Seattle, and the New York Yankees sort of sitting the top three teams on the outside. I think Oakland absolutely, positively is going to take that playoff spot in the American League. I really don't think there's any question about it. And then in the National League, the leaders right now in the East, it's the Washington Nationals, which is kind of surprising. The Central is Milwaukee, and the West is the Dodgers, with St. Louis and San Francisco pretty deadlocked for kind of that fourth spot. I think it's going to be San Francisco. So I guess the answer to your question, I think, is going to be Oakland and San Francisco taking the wild card spots in the National or the American and the National League, respectively. And JC and Elliot are not going
to
refute me.
I don't watch enough baseball to know, honestly.
But when it comes to baseball, this is all I'm interested in. The Chicago Cubs this year have called up two of their major prospects, Javier Baez and Jorge Soler. And between the two of them, in 24 games, have mashed 9 home runs. So that's a lot of home runs.
Was it the monster mash? I think it was a great New York smash. Wait, are you being serious?
Or between two guys in 24 games, 9 home runs is a lot?
That is a lot.
Is that a lot? Really?
Yeah. That's
okay.
A lot.
Well, right. Okay. Keep in mind.
I'm just breaking it down here. So if you roughly average that out to 4.5 home runs each over a 24 game period, that means one in every 5.5 games they're hitting a home run.
Well, the more impressive one is Soler, because Soler's actually only played 4 games and he's hit 2 home runs in those.
Okay, that's impressive. Why didn't you start with that?
Well, because Javier Baez in his first 9 games hit like 6 home runs.
See, this is what
JC misleading. Burying the lead.
Anyway, next year, Cubs year.
You buried that lead on sacred ground and salted the earth to make sure that it could never rise again, is what happened. I understand.
Also, his name, I did say Jorge.
I'm going to call you Ray Lewis from now on, how you buried that lead.
Chaos Bulldog is no longer going by Chaos Bulldog. I don't really know what to do with myself. At Jenny Matisek asks, what sports pundit would you rather see not getting tons of attention? Colin Coward. Moving on to the next.
Skip Bayless.
Stephen A. Smith.
Why don't you like Stephen A. Smith? Don't you know that all he has to do is talk like this? And everyone will naturally assume that he knows what he's talking about, even if he's not saying anything that common sense couldn't tell you in 5 seconds?
Skip Bayless is mean to LeBron.
Oh, that's the thing.
Thank God LeBron has you to defend his ego, JC.
I like Stephen A. Smith, but I feel like he gets too much attention to where he says stupid shit. Like he has to spill too much time, so it's just like just ease, pump your brakes a little bit, and just ease on back.
I'll tell you who needs more time, Dan Levitard.
Brian Selt. Yes, Dan Levitard. That's totally what I meant.
I tell you who needs more time is Wilbon. I want to hear more from him because I don't hear that much from him that long.
Wilbon is actually the one guy who I brought up the point where I even tweeted it with Josh Gordon, where I was like, the balls on this guy to be like, to say he's the one expressing disappointment in the NFL's lack of judgment and discretion. The only one at ESPN who referenced that same point was Michael Wilbon.
Yeah, I used to love watching Pardon the Interruption when I was in high school. That was like my show. Tony Kornheiser, Wilbon, it's good chemistry. Okay, next story.
Well, here's the thing. We're doing questions right now, but all of the remaining questions kind of have to do with fantasy football. So I think we might as well go into our fantasy football draft recap. What's your fantasy? Yes, we did our drafts last weekend for our individual leagues, and I was pretty happy with the team that I put together, but these next few questions kind of have to do with fantasy football. So before we get into the questions, guys, on a scale of 1 to 10, looking at your lineup, looking at where you were able to draft, how confident are you in the team that you've put together?
I have a sort of a story behind my draft.
It's a number, Elliot. I'm looking for a number.
Oh, 1 to 10?
Yeah.
I'd say 7.
Okay, JC?
6.
I'm going to go to firm 7.2. I don't know why I'm adding the 0.2. I just am. But what was your story?
Well, I was also at the draft at 7 p.m. on Saturday. Not this Saturday, but last Saturday. We cleared that discussion up. And like, I was actually, the only reason I remembered is I was listening to the last Inside the Locker. And the part where it was like, we had the discussion came on, and I was like, oh shit, it's like 6:45. And I'd just gotten to my girlfriend's house, and she has Time Warner, and it was out. And her house was like a fucking...
Because it's Time Warner, and they suck ass.
Yeah. And like, her house is really old, so I don't know what kind of stuff is in there, but like, it blocks all the phone signals. And so, like, I'm over here driving around Austin just trying to draft.
So, when you said her house was old, you really meant it was a bomb shelter from the Cold War, right?
Which has its benefits.
Lead-lined to keep out all of the atomic bombs, and also Elliot's ability to draft in fantasy football. But it still worked out for you, you some bitch.
Because, like, I drafted number 6, and the league auto-drafted for me Peyton Manning.
How in the blue hell in your league? I drafted 6 in my league. Peyton Manning went like number two.
I may have drafted like fifth or something, but I know it was not one, two, three,
that,
or four.
I'm sorry. The fact that Peyton Manning was still available to be auto-drafted at the sixth pick is just mind-boggling, guys. I don't know. Like, yeah, he's getting up there in age, but you did see last season, right? Like, yeah. you did pay attention to his ridiculous monster numbers, right? Like, this is not news to you.
Well, what's even better is like the second player I drafted was the Cardinals defense, and JC sends me a message: Are you dropped?
We actually had a question again from the Whiskey Wolf, and I'm not making this up. This is really on my screen. Why did Elliot draft the Cardinals defense in the first round?
Well, to be fair, his question was the second round, but...
Yeah, no, that makes it okay. No, okay, I figured something else out about Elliot. This is my ongoing quest to really get at the heart of what's going on in Elliot's brain. Yes, the heart and the brain. I'm mixing my metaphor. Shut the hell up.
They talk to each other.
I'm not an English major. I just play one on the radio. So I think I figured something out about Elliot. Elliot is a man who does not believe in having mediocre passions, about being middle of the road on anything. When Elliot likes something, Elliot really likes something. There is no lukewarm affection in this man. When he likes a movie about giant monsters fighting aliens, he really likes that movie.
You're not wrong. You're actually getting me to a T, dude. This is
and
what
he likes
funny.
All the LSU Tigers that are on.
Damn right.
All of them. All of them.
Patrick Peterson, the fucking Honey Badger, all of them.
When he sees a romantic comedy that kind of works for him, it really works for him by virtue of the fact that it kind of worked for him. Like, he is a guy that when he likes something, he will elevate it. He is just a force of positive energy, and it makes me sick. But the point is...
Hey, that's why I'm your fan.
There you go.
He likes, sort of walked into that
he likes very mediocre things a lot, and that's why we know each other.
Dear listeners, like, that's actually how we became friends, is like... Brian would be at the former site's events, and I'd be like, I'm a huge fan. And Brian,
what was my reaction every time you
were
said
just
that?
Like, what?
Why?
I don't what.
So I'm glad Elliot has these great passions for very mediocre things.
It's not mediocre things. I don't think they're mediocre. They might be objective.
There's a commenter on the site that I think summed Elliot up perfectly. I can't find
it was on the If I Stay review, I think.
Okay. The comment was basically just, LOL, I love you, Elliot, just keep swimming, or something like that.
Like, well, Elliot, well, one guy said, you know, I sort of get where Elliot's coming from on these reviews, but if you could just justify me why you don't like Looper and you didn't like District 9.
No, I'm not going to let you do that again.
No, I did it on the comments.
So. Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
So the other thing about Elliot is that he is very much in favor of the participation medal.
Yeah.
He thinks everybody deserves a little bit of credit.
A little bit.
That being said, I also took the Cardinals defense as my defense. In the seventh round, when all of the way more important positions had been filled, here's the thing, they would have still been available as they were because they were.
Well, what I can tell you there is that I was so panicked. That was the first pick I actually made. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I was in a church parking lot like, what do I do? Okay, the Cardinals. Cardinals.
You are Andre from the league. You're sitting there like, wait, I wanted Mike Williams, Tampa Bay.
No,
is Keyshawn Johnson still playing? I don't know what to do.
No, that actually happened to me. Like, I was drafting a receiver, and I thought it was Victor Cruz, but it was like Victor from like Tampa Bay, and I was like, who the fuck is this?
Plaxico Burress. I didn't want him on my team. Whoops.
In my draft, I was kind of thrown for a loop because I had the seventh pick, and I was like, all right, I've never drafted a receiver first, but at seven, I'm gonna go with Megatron. Wouldn't you know it, number one overall pick, fucking Megatron. And it just completely threw me for a loop all over, and then I ended up with Eddie Lacy as my first overall pick, which I'm not a fan of because he had the concussion last year that had him out for a number of games.
I should have sent you a message.
Yeah, Elliot, like, I'm sorry that I gave you shit.
Yeah,
you
to
took
say,
Eddie Lacy as
fuck?
Your first pick?
Yeah.
And you're not Elliot. You should know better.
Thank you. I am disappointed in you.
I know, because if I'd have known and I wanted really great receivers, I could have drafted Brandon Marshall first, because I ended up later as my first receiver getting Alshon Jeffrey also.
I just love the fact that I said something that I thought was really going to piss Elliot off, and his response was, yeah, totally. Thank you.
This is only my second year playing this. Like, and I can't wait. I have another draft coming up, and I can't wait because I'm actually going to know what I'm doing even more. I'm going to be like, okay, quarterback first, running back, wide receiver, running back, tight end, and then defense. Yeah. It's how you should draft it.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I got boned last year by this running backs first mentality, because the thing that nobody took into account when they put forth this idea that you take a running back first were the NFL's new rules that protect receivers and they protect quarterbacks, to the point that not only is a future Hall of Famer like Peyton Manning, you know, very late in his career having a 7-touchdown game, Nick Foles in the same season has a 7-touchdown game.
I picked him up off of the waiver wire last year, actually.
But you see what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, it's become so pass happy that literally Nick Foles can match the same record as Peyton Manning in a single season.
Well, and on top of that, like, quarterbacks even get points for running.
Yeah.
So if you got a mobile quarterback like a Kaepernick or a Cam Newton, you just get bonus.
And especially if you're in a PPY league, I'm sorry, quarterback is way more important than a running back. I mean, in my team, I took Drew Brees because he was the best quarterback available at 4, and he's consistent, he's great. And therefore, the running backs I got were sort of, I wouldn't say they're middle of the road. They're good running backs, but they're not the spectacular, number generators that some of the other guys are. I got Alfred Morris and Frank Gore.
That's good.
Two very good running backs. They're going to be very solid for me, but they're not sexy names anymore.
Yeah.
Like, they're not Adrian Peterson. But I was far more concerned with getting a quarterback because of the nature of the fact that there are so many more opportunities for points in the passing game than there are in the running game. It's just the way it is right now.
Yeah, I think you're completely right. Your quarterback should be your cornerstone of your team.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That should be a good 35 points you can just count on every week. And then your running back, you should have just some consistency. Wide receivers, if you can't get Megatron, you can't get maybe the guy from Larry Fitzgerald. If you can't get Fitzgerald when he's healthy, then just get some people that will get you 15 points
a week. I also got Larry Fitzgerald, for the record.
Nice.
But yeah, there's a question here that I think is going to be interesting to answer because I don't think we can. At Heath Ferris asks us, best sleeper pick you made in the fantasy draft? I feel like it's there's no way for us to know who the sleeper pick is.
It's true.
Because
I feel like mine, because he coming off an ACL injury, but because of the way this offense plays, I think he's going to have a huge year, Jeremy Maclin. I forgot where I picked him up. I know in my league...
Is he still in Philadelphia?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I know in my league, the sleeper pick of the entire draft in general was probably Tom Brady at 85.
Yeah, Tom Brady was a real late pickup in my... Like, second penultimate round, I think somebody finally picked him up as a backup. Like, I don't like Tom Brady at all.
Mm-hmm.
I am curious to know why his stock has fallen so much. And I think it has to do with the fact that people are finally starting to realize that the team around Brady is not good at all. Like, you had receivers last year who looked like they were promising. You had Edelman. You had, who was the other guy? I can't even remember
now. He's just the other guy.
Exactly, because what happened was they had a couple of good games and then just petered out. Yeah, and it's likely he's not going to have Gronk. And if he does, it's not going to be for the whole season because that guy's going to get hurt again.
Yeah,
he's injury prone.
Yeah, everyone in the Patriots or everyone in the world seems to realize this except for the Patriots. They don't put good talent around him. And this week, they even traded away one of his offensive linemen.
Oh, that's
good. Which he was pissed about, actually.
Yeah, well.
I tell you, my sort of sleeper, because I feel like people are sort of discounting him because some of the talent around him is healthy again, is Anquan Boldin.
Did you just pick my entire team? Because, like, you've just named four different people that I actually
I was looking at a lot of the four of us, and Adam, who's in here, went with a lot of the same guys.
Yeah.
Depending on how good Blake Bortles is going to be, I also picked up Cecil Shorts really late, and I think Cecil Shorts is going to have a good year if Blake Bortles is going to be as good as people think.
I think all this is complete, because these guys could all bust out. All these guys that were like, oh, nobody's rolling the dice on these guys, and then we could find out, well, there's a fucking reason for that.
Yeah.
But I took Danny Woodhead from San Diego.
Oh, that's a great pick.
Because he's on mine. And it was a very late pickup.
Super late.
And it was only because I realized that my two running backs have the same bye week. So it was like, I need a couple more running backs to fill in that for that week. And Danny Woodhead is a guy who nobody really talks about, but he's when he hits the line, he's fearless. He's a tiny little white dude.
Had 210 points last year.
But he had 210 points last year. So I think he's going to be. And I got, you know, like Elliot was saying, Anquan Boldin was still available late in the draft.
Yeah, I got him late.
And it's like, I don't know if people just have a lot of faith in Michael Crabtree or no faith in Colin Kaepernick, but Anquan Boldin is still, in my mind, an elite receiver.
Well, and here's the thing. Anquan Boldin, if his role does get diminished, he's going to get those, like, mid-range passes because Crabtree's the only one going down the field. I'll take those mid-range patches for my fantasy team.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you, the player I'm the most excited about is not Peyton Manning. The player I'm most excited about is the person I had last year, who I think is going to have a better year this year, is Zach Stacy.
Yeah. Because
the Rams have lost Bradford. They're going to probably go to a run-first team, probably try to get somebody who can just manage the game and just pound that ball to get through games by slowing down, by speeding that clock up by running.
I am interested
in... Bradford in the offseason lost Golden Tate.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. So they're definitely going to be turning into more of a run team, I feel. So yeah, that'll be interesting to watch for as well. The thing you don't want to have happen, however, like I thought... That, you know, there were people in our league that did draft Josh Gordon, and I thought, man, that's a risk. That's going to come end up biting them in the ass. People that got Ray Rice, because it was like, well, it was like, well, 2-game suspension. Okay, I can understand that. I got Wes Welker, because Wes Welker is a great receiver and a guy that just eats up. Like, he poops out so many points. It's ridiculous. Like, he's always there in the end zone for Peyton Manning. It's great. And then hours, literally, like, guys, so last year I missed getting into the playoffs because of LeSean McCoy in the very last game of the season, and it was only because they were letting him run out the clock against Dallas, and if it had been anybody else just eating up the last minutes, I would have made the playoffs, but every little inch that he gained was one more point I think I ended up losing by 2 or 3 points, and then I got bumped out. So my luck with fantasy football has been such that I feel like Job sometimes. I feel like the fantasy football Job, where this shit just keeps piling on no matter what I do. But I thought, you know, this year I've done the work, and I really feel confident that I won't make the same mistakes, and I feel like my luck has turned around. Hours after our draft is over, Wes Welker gets a concussion. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? This has got to be some sort of sick joke. Now, we don't know whether he's going to miss any actual playing time, but it was just like... Of course this happened to me. Of course it did. I'm Bobby Brady and I found the idol on the beach. This happens to me every year. Awesome. Fantasy football has started off on the right foot. Absolutely. Bonk, bonk. The thing is, bonk.
Like, when I saw that tweet, I didn't have to even read it once I read the part about what's welcome to know it was Brian. I'm just like, is this something that's totally not deserving this much bad luck? Oh, it's probably Brian. I mean, but
yeah.
That being said, like, I know I'm not making the playoffs, so, but you probably will, like, at least get close.
I have developed a new phrase, by the way, FML. No, not fuck my life. Fuck my lineup. So whenever I say FML, you know what I'm talking about. Well, I think that's pretty much what we got for a show this week, unless you guys had anything else you wanted to throw out there before we bow out.
So the A&M game just ended a little while ago.
Okay.
And so the first quarterback post Johnny Football is a freshman named Kenny Hill. Kenny Hill...
I don't know you. That's my purse.
Kenny Hill has broken Johnny Manziel's single-game passing mark in his first game ever.
511 yards.
511 yards. He might have to change his name to Kenny Football.
So, nice. I love that not only is Johnny Football well on his way to washing out in the NFL, but he's already being forgotten in the one city that would really exalt and kiss the ground that he walks on. And they're already like, Johnny who?
You know, that's the thing. College football fans have short memories. So, I mean, if they got somebody else comes in, it's like, oh, that guy can play?
That would be so amazing if this guy outshines everything Johnny Football did in his time at A&M.
Like, because, I mean, Spurrier doesn't put together cupcake teams. I mean, their defense could be shaky, but to hang 52 on a Spurrier team?
It's one of those things where I actually kind of credit A&M fans for like being able to move on so quickly, because here in Austin, we still tell tales of Vince Young and Colt McCoy, and it's like, guys, we got to move
on. And Colt McCoy never was that good.
and Vince Young, Vince Young, he's got his own steakhouse anytime he comes to town. Like people, and it's like, guys, come on.
It's like 10 years ago now.
Come on, guys.
Well, like there's a place downtown, like Logan's, that I think still plays the 2005 championship game at the end of every night at 2 a.m. It's like, okay, at a certain point, it stops being nostalgic and it starts being sad.
To me, it reminds me of when you go to a Star Trek convention.
You were going to say strip club.
No, well, that's sad too. But no, when you go to a Star Trek convention and you have those people who are in one episode who are there signing on. Here's another example.
That's horrible.
At Comic-Con, I don't know if I mentioned this. Walter Jones, who played the Black Ranger on Mighty Morphin Power Rangers,
oh.
$30 an autograph is what he was charging.
Are you fucking kidding me?
And I was like, oh, buddy. Oh, come on, man.
The least liked Power Ranger on this show?
Well, I don't know. I liked him in his hip-hop Hito, where he's like, I'm mixing dance with martial arts. I'm like, no, you're just dancing.
Well, I liked him better than Billy. Billy was just sort of, why are you even with this crowd?
Billy was the Sheldon of that show.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like,
who, by the way, did not deserve another Emmy, but then again, Emmys are broken and a half. Well, that's going to do it for our show. That's a weird note to end on, but also very appropriate considering Inside the Locker, which you can find on Stitcher and on iTunes, as well as on Twitter at ITLcast, where you can follow us individually at Bri Guy Salisbury.
At ITL Elliot.
At JCDeLeon1.
And also, you should become a subscriber. We've been very, very busy over the last few weeks. With traveling and then with Fest of Us, and then I've been moving. But now that all that's over, we are about to unleash the dogs of war. No, we're about to unleash a shit ton of subscriber exclusive content. So now would be a really great time, if you haven't already, click on that link on the side there and become a subscriber. It can cost you as little as $2 a month, and that is how we continue to bring you content. So if you like what we do, please consider becoming a subscriber, although it is absolutely positively voluntary and not necessary to hear all of the content, just the good stuff in the subscriber forums. Well, that's going to do it. I think I've decided that I'm just going to end every show the same way, and that is by paraphrasing the great Rocket Raccoon. When it comes to sportscast, ain't no thing like us, 'cept us.